Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and our guest this episode, we've got Dan McGuire, fishing guide over on the Mississippi River. Big River Angling Adventures is the name of his guide business. And in this interview, it's Dan's first time on, so we're going to get to know him a little bit right away. And then we're going to talk Mississippi River walleye. So this is going to kick off our open water podcast for 2025. I'm sure we'll have a few late ice episodes probably yet to come. There's still a lot of great ice fishing yet to be had out there, but river fishing is happening right now, and we figured we might as well jump into it. So we've got Dan. Let's get to it. Spring Mississippi River walleyes. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool both on and off the water for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. Where are you from, man? Where does the fishing story or stories begin for you? Go ahead.
All right. Well, the fishing stories begin if a person wants to go way back, I started fishing, obviously, as most of us did as a little kid. My dad was not a fisherman, really didn't have any interest in fishing and that when I was growing up. My mom was the angler in the family, and so she's the one that got me started fishing. And my mom is an Iowa girl, and so that meant bullheads. And so her and I did a lot of bullhead fishing growing up from shore. I grew up in southwestern Minnesota. And so I spent a lot of time on the pothole lakes down there, anywhere as far as my bike would take me. So that's kind of how my fishing story began. I guess my fishing the Mississippi River and kind of that river saga, how that got going was, back when I was in college there in Mankato, Minnesota, I was also working a job while I was going to school, and a buddy and I were sitting in the break room one night at work and looking at the Minneapolis Star Tribune, and there was a picture, it was Marchish if I remember correct, there was a picture of a guy holding a 14-pound walleye that he caught below the dam there at Red Wing, Minnesota. And so myself and this friend of mine, you know, we took a look at that. We knew how to fish for walleye, so we figured that was something we could go do is, you know, drive to Red Wing and catch a 14-pound walleye. And so that's what we did. And believe it or not, we did not catch a 14-pound walleye.
It's not that simple, huh?
it really isn't. No. In fact, we came back from the river multiple times those first couple years, just scratching our heads with our butts kicked and that. So fishing the river, fishing moving water was completely different, you know, for the lakes that we both grew up fishing. and that. And I guess at that point, you know, I fell in love with the river right away, and fell in love with the challenge that presented to me. And so I guess I kind of made it my mission to figure out how to catch those fish. And so we did put in a lot of time, got to know some different guys over there. At the time there was a gentleman that ran a bait shop in Red Wing, by name of Ralph Dirks, and he was a wealth of knowledge and, you know, was willing to help a young guy out too. So, you know, long story short, we just stayed after it, got into some tournaments over there, which I felt like fishing tournaments and being competitive certainly shortened the learning curve for me, and that as well. And you know, here we are, you know, now 30 plus years later, after leaving the river that first time with my tail between my legs, here I am feeling confident I can put fish in the boat just about every time I hit the river now.
What were some of the big, you know, memorable experiences fishing, you know, on or off the water where you just learned, where you feel like you learned something, you know, that was meaningful, kind of bringing you to where you're at today, more confident and got some things figured out? I'm curious what those stepping stones were, just some of those epiphanies, just realizations, like, oh, you know, whatever it is, whatever comes to mind.
Sure. Reflecting back and even thinking again, way back when I first started going over to the river and trying to figure things out, you know, I remember spending time watching other fishermen and not so much, not so much in the watching that the plan was to go in and steal these spots, you know, and to go in there, and take a spot from somebody, but more to learn to see what these guys were doing differently and why were they successful. And one of the guys I remember watching was Keith Gavias. And that this is a long time ago, but he lived down in the Rochester area. And I remember kind of watching him, and after the fact, going into some of those areas and seeing, okay, why was he fishing here? You know, what's the current doing here? And why are fish relating to a structure like this? And so two of the factors when fishing a river that are huge are current and food. And so you always have to be mindful of those two aspects, current and food, when you're chasing these river fish. And I guess, again, thinking back to those early days, a lot of it was once you kind of figured out, you know, what the current was doing, if you were on the right part of the seam, or if you were on that sweet spot on a wing dam or something, for instance, you know, kind of once you got those locations figured out, now that presentation piece came into play. And so what were some of the effective presentations or techniques then to get to these fish and get them to bite? The other thing that was really key, at least for me on the river, was using the current to my advantage too. And that, for instance, if we were vertical jigging, you know, matching the drift speed of the boat to the drift speed of the jig, and that, so that you could keep the bait vertical and you could keep the bait in front of the fish's face. And you know, that can be very crucial during certain times of the year when you get on a really good vertical jigging bite for those big sauger in pool four. A lot of times they want that bait as vertical as possible. They don't want that bait moving. They don't want it dragging. They want it sitting 6-8 inches off the bottom. And so really being able to use the current, matching the current speed in a vertical jigging presentation. Some of the other things too, if a person's sitting on a current seam and you're pitching a hair jig or pitching a blade bait or something like that, again, matching that current speed so that you're making and maintaining bottom contact, but and that you got enough weight to hit the bottom, but that when you lift that rod tip, you're getting that nice sweep of your bait down the current, because those fish are sitting there laying into the current. And that's what they're programmed to do, is wait for that food to sweep past them on like it's on a conveyor belt. And so again, being able to match those things. Don't fight the current. Use the current to your advantage.
Yeah, but finding fish, you got to find some fish first, right? I kind of want to sit on that topic for a little bit and talk about seasonal patterns. And maybe we should probably articulate a little bit where, either where you have the most experience, on the river, or just kind of narrow down an area, whatever, seems like the most appropriate to talk about. For you, you're the expert, but just curious about those seasonal patterns and really just trying to put yourself in a position where you can be around fish too.
Sure. Yeah. And you know what? And that's the other part of it too, that I didn't mention is again, it's just that knowledge, that observation and, where those fish are, because you're spot on. These fish in the river they're migrational. And so, they're moving all the time too. And so making sure that you're following the seasonal movements and that you're putting yourself in the place of where those fish are going to be or are is crucial. So I guess geographically speaking, the bulk of my fishing is done on pools 3 and 4 of the Mississippi River. And so pool 3 is there's a dam in Hastings, Minnesota, and that runs down to just upstream of Red Wing, Minnesota, a few miles. And so that's how pool 3 is identified. And then pool 4 is from that dam just above Red Wing down to Alma, Wisconsin. And so that's a 44-mile stretch of river. And so that's a big chunk of water and that. So so backing up then to seasonal movements, the bulk of my time in the spring is spent on pool 4. And so those fish, speaking specifically, I guess, of saugers, a lot of those fish will sit in wintering holes and that deeper holes in the river all winter long, waiting for that spring spawn to happen. And then you'll see those fish move up, they'll go as far as they can. Oftentimes it's the dam is what stops them. And then that's where you'll find a bulk of your fish. Your walleyes and that, obviously there's always some resident fish in that in the river. It's always got a good population of fish, but you'll get in the spring a big push of those fish off of Lake Pepin up into the river on pool 4. And so right now, speaking right now, current situation, what I'm finding the times that I've been on the river so far this spring is that's where our saugers are at. I'm still finding them in and around those deeper wintering holes. You're finding the walleyes are starting to make that push up the river. And so finding them in some of those shallower spots downstream and that. So they're showing up in those kind of pinch points or migration spots right now. And that's going to continue here for the next 2-3 weeks. And then things are going to be on fire. Those first probably 3-4 miles within that dam north of or upstream of Red Wing, the fishing is going to be lights out. So you get that seasonal push in the spring. Then once our spawn is complete, those fish are going to start migrating back downstream, and a lot of them heading back out onto Lake Pepin. And so it's almost the reverse of what we're doing right now. You're kind of hitting those pinch points again and those stopover spots where those fish are stopping to rest, stopping to feed, setting up shop for a few days or a few weeks. And then it seems like we flip a switch and now we go out to fish in Lake Pepin more. And when we hit early summer, a lot of fishing live bait rigs and that out on Lake Pepin as our water continues to warm and that through the summer. What we get is pool 4's got a very high population of shad on it. And so those fish start relating to the basin of Lake Pepin and start chasing those shad around out there. And now the trolling bike kicks in. And so now you can catch a lot of fish pulling boards and crankbaits out there. So that's kind of our spring movement, our summer movement. And then in the fall, as our water starts to cool, you'll see those fish push back up into the rivers or back up into more of what I guess your main channel of the river, leaving Lake Pepin. They'll follow the shad up as our water temps cool. And once again, now you get this really good bite in more of the river proper.
You know, do you spend all your morning on electronics? I'm curious about that progression for you when you're checking spots. What are some of the sweet spots look like? Do you like to throw a jig in there and try to get bit, you know, first and foremost, or do you spend a couple hours driving around trying to, you know, find that core population of fish, or just sort of your method, like day-to-day method when you're breaking down some water, trying to figure out, you know, where some, you know, a population of bitey fish might be?
Sure. And that's what the first part of it is using your electronics and trying to find those fish. Again, with the amount of time, the amount of experience on the river, and a lot of the guys that have spent a lot of time on the river, in the back of your mind, you've got a good idea, you know, okay, here we are, it's the first week of March, where should we be looking for these fish? And so one of the areas that I'm looking at is looking at areas that have some current, have some flow on them. Also looking at areas that have like some rock or some sand, something that's gonna hold the heat, that as our days get longer and things are heating up, you know, what structures are holding some of that heat better for us. And so those are the areas I'm looking for, and then using your electronics and going in. Side imaging is a great tool on the river. And looking for those fish, whether it be on a sand flat or in some of the dunes, you'll have where we've got a sandy bottom. If there's enough current, will create sand dunes on the bottom. And so looking at those fish in the dunes. But again, for the most part, you're going in and looking at those fish and trying to find those fish on your electronics before you're spending time casting at them. And again, I do a lot of that on my own. I try to be on the river as much as I can. And so a lot of times when I'm out there alone, I'm probably 50% out there looking for fish on the electronics, and then 50% of the time casting at those fish looking for active fish.
I'm curious what your tips and tricks are this time of year when water temperatures are cold specifically. You know, what are you doing with your presentation, or just sort of your cadence maybe, or just, you know, sort of some of your tips and tricks on, you know, trying to tackle, you know, this cold water and what that does to the fish and the personality of the bites. I'm just sort of curious to sit on that topic for a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely. So it is, you know, obviously when the water temps are colder, you know, the fish are more lethargic. They aren't quite chasing and as aggressive as they are as those temps warm up. One of the things, and again, when I approach a day on the river too, I'm always expecting myself to be, or my goal for myself is to be versatile and, you know, try not to stay focused on fishing memories and stay focused on trying multiple presentations, multiple baits. But one of the things I found effective, and one of the things that was most effective for me here this past Saturday when I was out, was I got on a decent vertical jigging bite. And for me, this time of year, cold water, it's kind of the do-nothing cadence, and that as far as vertical jigging goes. Again, find those fish, locate them, make sure you're in a fishy spot, and then drop that jig down, match the drift of the current with the drift of your boat, the drift of your jig, make sure those things are all in alignment. And then what I'll do is I'll drop that jig down to the bottom, just touch the bottom and lift it up about 6-8 inches and just hold it and not move that thing at all. And just hold it, let it drift in the current, let the plastic do its work down there below the surface. And the only time that I move that thing intentionally or on purpose is when I'm dropping it back down to make sure I'm near the bottom. And those fish really want that do nothing cadence, and that when our water's cold. They just want that jig swimming downstream, just want that plastic pulsing in the water. And so that's what I have found to be effective for me. The other thing that this time of year, and that when the water's cold as well, fishing, if I'm pitching or casting, whether it's a plastic, a hair jig, or a blade bait, again, now it's a very subtle working that hair jig back to the boat, you know, again, letting the current do its thing, but it's a subtle lift and fall, and letting that hair poof in the current and settle back to the bottom. So you're not seeing, and I was watching this some with the Active Target 2 over the weekend. They're not chasing real heavy, and they aren't real aggressive. So a subtle presentation, again, always making sure that bait is somewhere near the bottom. The other piece of that too is sometimes, again, on some of these sand flats where you've got some of these dunes, the effective way to do it is to just let that jig drag in the sand. Just downstream, let that jig drag and bounce through those dunes too. But again, in this colder water, slow things down, be more precise with your presentations. As our water starts to warm here over the next few weeks, now, specifically, again, fishing a hair jig or a plastic, if I'm pitching them, I'll really give them a pretty good pop and be pretty aggressive with them.
Devil's Lake is one of North Dakota's premier outdoor recreational destinations. And to find out more about what the lake and the community of Devil's Lake has to offer, head to devilslakend.com. That link is in the description. The Onyx Fish app is an excellent tool for finding your next fishing spot. Download the app today to get free lake information in the states of Minnesota and Wisconsin. I'm talking about research tools that we talk about on the JMO podcast all the time with all the top pros here in the Midwest. I'm talking about satellite imagery, fisheries data, lake surveys, contour maps. That and so much more can be found in one place here now with the Onyx Fish app, a phenomenal tool, both on and off the water, for discovering new great fishing opportunities, many of which you would have never known existed. Link is in the description of this podcast. Shields is a one-stop shop retailer with all your outdoor needs covered. Shields has all the top brands on inventory in every department and a knowledgeable staff known for great service. With over 30 locations across the country, you can find the nearest store by going online to shields.com. If you can't get to a store, rest assured all their best deals are online as well. So once again, head to shields.com for more detailed information. That link is in the description of this podcast. If you have any fishing memory or a fish that you would like to commemorate with a replica, or you have questions about getting fish replicas done, reach out to Jamie Rizavi from Rizavi Taxidermy Studio in New Rockford, North Dakota. Jamie and his crew do next level work here at the JMO headquarters. We are blessed to have so many replicas made by Jamie. Reach out. You can find him on social media or online at rizavitaxidermystudio.com. The link is in the description of this podcast. What's the status of the river as far as, like, you know, current and flow and water color and just some of those elements? And maybe does that, you know, is that something that you kind of have to check on each and every day? And does that, you know, affect your presentation or some of the adjustments that you're trying to make, you know, whether it's size, profile, color, like any of those things?
It certainly does dictate some of your presentations. And definitely dictates the location of these fish. Currently our river levels are down and our flow is low. And so these fish right now, because of that, they can be scattered from bank to bank right now. And that as our current picks up, as the flow picks up, you're going to find these fish relating more to current seams, more to eddies, more to anything that's going to block or disrupt that current. But right now, the current and the flow is low enough where those fish can be spread out. So now it's really important with the current river level to use your electronics and to make sure that you're hunting fish. You know, water clarity is the water's really clear right now. It's nicknamed the muddy Mississippi, but it's anything but muddy right now. That water is very clear. We did get last week 10 inches of snow here in our area. And so I'm hoping that the flow will pick up a little bit and definitely that'll affect our water clarity and dirty our water up just a little bit for us too. Water temps over the weekend, I noticed anywhere from 39 to 42 degree water temps, and that when I was out. So, you know, again, my prediction is I'm looking at things. To me, there's fish to be caught. There are fish being caught right now. I mean, the fishing's pretty decent right now, but over the next few weeks, this thing is really going to get cracking.
When you got the low flow like happening, like you say, where, you know, these fish can kind of spread out, is that really what you find? Like, you know, under these conditions, you've been out recently, you know, I mean, setting, sort of painting that picture and getting that expectation, like, are you fishing for, you know, individual fish or small schools, or do you, you know, try to look around long enough to find, you know, bigger schools of fish?
Right now, what I've been finding are the smaller schools of fish, and specifically talking walleyes, and that it's these smaller pods, smaller groups of fish. Then, and that we haven't had the big wave of fish that have pushed out of Lake Pepin yet, and have started coming up the river there by Red Wing. But they're still seeing, you know, a good number of fish on some of these spring areas where you'd expect them to be. Again, right now, it's not just, at least from my perspective and my experience, I'm not seeing these large schools of fish yet. You know, in particular, one of the areas that I went and checked on Saturday is again, another spring spot that I like to fish. It's a big sand flat, and I went and checked that, looked at it with the forward facing sonar, the active target, and I was glad to see some fish had showed up there already. But again, not like there will be in a couple weeks, and that on that spot, and I actually got a few of them to bite off of that spot too. So no, I guess to answer your question, right now, my target is smaller pods, smaller schools of fish, because that's what they're, the big push hasn't happened yet. And I'm still seeing reports of guys that are doing well, again, fishing at, that are ice fishing and are catching fish through the ice on the upper end of Lake Pepin. So that's one of the things, based on what I've seen, the times that I've been out, and based on these ice fishing reports that I'm getting, those fish are still a lot of them out on the lake waiting to make that push up river.
Let's talk about forage a little bit. You know, you mentioned earlier, you know, like having some sort of understanding of the food, or just, you know, just some sort of perspective on that is a big factor. I'm curious how you would kind of describe, you know, the forage on the river, and where do you feel like that has the biggest you know, impact in terms of your decision making? Is, you know, picking spots, or, you know, your presentation?
Sure. So speaking big picture and that seasonally, when thinking about forage, you know, in the spring and in the fall, and that our forage, and that they're moving to where we've got warm water. And again, specifically speaking pool four, that's up by the dam. And so you'll get those fish again that are coming up, and they're looking to eat. They're following the bait fish and that. And so you'll see a lot of them up where our warmer water is. Also specifically in the fall, that's when we get that big push of saugers and walleyes up to the dam in the fall again, and as our temps cool down out on the lake, those fish will move towards the dam. And so that's when you'll get that big migration of fish. I guess for me, breaking things down and trying to decide maybe where I'm going to fish and how I'm going to fish, I hope I'm not jumping all over the place here for you, Taylor.
That's okay, man. It's a podcast. We can go. Yeah, we can jump all over.
All right. Well, so in the summertime, and I think I mentioned this a little bit earlier, that you get a really good crankbait trolling bite out on Lake Pepin midsummer. And those fish are out there, and they're out there chasing the shad are, you know, at an ideal size for them. There's big schools, big pods of shad out there. And so you get those fish chasing those, the shad around. And so when that bite earlier in the summer really kicks in, the fishing can be phenomenal. And again, pulling your crankbaits, your shaky shads, flicker minnows, you know, those types of shad style baits and that out there, are very effective. As those shad continue to grow and continue to increase in size, you'll see that bite taper off later in the summer because, you know, those, I guess the feeding windows shorten up. You know, you used to have those fish that were out there chasing those shad that were only, you know, a couple inches long, and they're chasing them around out there. And so now they've got these long feeding windows because they got to eat more to fill their bellies. Now you've got those shad that are now, you know, 3 and 4 inches, and they aren't, the bite windows aren't as wide, and it takes less for them to fill up. That bite starts to die a little bit. And so when I approach things, obviously when that bite's going hot, I want to be out there and be a part of it. As that bite starts to get a little tougher because our shad are bigger, now I'll move to different areas of the river. For instance, that's a time of year I often make a shift up to pool 3. And so pool 3 doesn't have that huge shad population in it. And so those fish are relating on pool 3 more to your wing dams. And so now you can go in and that wing dam bite really kicks off. And again, it's from my perspective is I can go in and fish a wing dam, and what I'm throwing in there for these fish to eat has got a lot less competition than that crankbait I was pulling out on Lake Pepin. And at that same time, or I'll switch to the lower end of pool 4. Again, that's got a lot of good wing dams. And again, now I've got fish that are still have a consistent bite window and a consistent feeding period. And there's a lot less competition to get eaten for whatever I'm throwing on that wing dam.
A lot of people probably don't give enough credit to just learning about the forage, even though that's not the fish we're fishing for. But when you start to learn about the seasonal patterns, the preferences in water quality or water temperature, like you mentioned, you know, understanding where the bait fish might be and just wrapping your head around that even before you start thinking about where the walleyes might be, it's just like such a big piece to the puzzle when you start to learn those things, right? And then, you know, talking about water clarity, the flow, the seasonal patterns, and it all starts to come together. You know, as anglers, I feel like that forage piece is one that we just don't, we probably don't spend enough time in every scenario, you know, lakes, reservoirs, sloughs, you know, wherever invertebrates are the deal, or wherever it's, and where that changes, you know, and you, your understanding of how pool 3 sets up versus pool 4 based on the forage. And that's like, I mean, that's a huge, that's just like such a huge piece of information that might, you know, super easily be overlooked by somebody that's, you know, planning a trip for that time of year on the river, you know, I'm grateful for that information. I think that can be a huge deal.
And, you know, I almost kind of contradict myself a little bit with some of that I've talked about, but I guess it's there's a point in the year, when I flip and go a 180 when looking at forage, you know, and so it's that piece of boy in the spring, you know, follow the forage, follow where they at. And that translates into that summer to midsummer where now, you know, and again, I am so lucky that I get to fish, these pools, two, three, and four of the Mississippi, because I have that opportunity to switch gears that by midsummer, when there's so much forage in the system and those bite windows shorten up because these fish, you know, they open their mouth and they swim through a school of shad and they're full for the day, you know, and that where I can transition and go to do something else. And so I do. It seems like that for that first part of the year, you know, it's follow the forage. And then once that forage gets so big, now all of a sudden it's okay. shift gears. Go someplace and fish something where your bait doesn't have the same competition, where you're dragging that shaky shad, flicker shad, whatever, around through thousands of competing minnows, where now I can go to a wing dam and throw something in there, a willow cat, a Ned rig, or a crankbait, you know, something different in there, where now it's got a lot less competition to get eaten. Those fish are still hungry, but you know, they aren't sitting at the buffet, you know.
Totally.
They've got to be more selective. So I do. I kind of make that shift mid season, kind of that 180, and then all of a sudden as our water temps cool, fall, you know, it changes to fall. Now you start switching back again, and now it's follow that forage again. And you know, follow those migrations of shad as they move up the river. The other piece to that too then is again knowing that when fall turns around and those fish are putting the feed bag on, finding some of those areas, those feeding flats, those places where there is current and that where those fish are really chewing. And those are the spots that I key on, especially early fall. Is those spots where you've got the current, you've got the forage, and it's a conveyor belt of food for them coming by, because now that's your focus is feeding and getting fat for the winter.
Is it safe to say that you would prefer to fish artificials versus live bait?
For most of the season, it's not even close. Absolutely, I like fishing artificials.
So let's talk a little bit about that. You know, your decision-making process of like, why you like artificials, but also too, we should talk a little bit about live bait. You know, when do you feel like it's necessary? How do you sort of have that approach to your day of fishing with lure presentation, you know, sort of artificials versus live bait?
I guess a couple of the things, and again, I don't know if I've got a great theory on all of this. It's more based on experience and past practice, past success. If you or I were heading out in the boat today, Taylor, we would definitely have some fatheads in the boat with us today. So right now, this transition where these fish are in with these cooler water temps, we would definitely have a couple scoops of fatheads in the boat. Because I think right now, probably looking at about a 50-50% success ratio on both live bait and artificials. And so again, if our goal is to put fish in the boat, we're going to make sure we've got the tools in the boat to catch those fish. Over the next few weeks, again, as this water continues to warm up and as these fish become more aggressive, become more focused on the job they need to do this spring, I'm probably going to fish 90% artificials. And my go-to artificials in the spring, I absolutely love casting a hair jig and pitching a hair jig up into the shallows, targeting those bigger fish. Blade baits, we got some real nice fish on blade baits and that last spring. And then I don't have as much success, me personally, pitching plastics up shallow. I know some folks are really good at it, but I still do pitch plastics in that in the spring. I do better vertical jigging plastics in that March and April than I do pitching the plastics. But a lot of our big fish last spring came on either a hair jig or a blade bait. I can say confidently our big fish, our pre-spawn and our post-spawn fish that we were catching, or at least my boat was catching on the river last spring, not a one of them was caught on live bait. So you know, again, as I see those water temps warm a little bit, I'll switch over completely to fishing artificials, especially in the spring, pitching hair jigs up shallow. You know, I think just the confidence, the experience, the number of big fish that I've caught or that folks in the boat with me have caught pitching hair jigs definitely focuses me on throwing hair jigs. I think some of it too is the movement that you get with a hair jig. And cadence-wise there, I tend to give that hair jig a pretty solid pop. And again, try to find balance the size of the hair jig with the speed of the current so that that jig's getting a really nice sweep and that with the current. And so I'm not on the reel a whole lot. I'm more on the rod, you're snapping that hair jig. And so I believe it's something to the action of that hair. And I tie all my own hair jigs. And so I use real bucktail and that with them when I tie them. So I think that the hair poofs in the water and gives that jig a really good action. And so I think that in combination with the snap and the action of that hair is something that helps give it not just that feeding instinct bite, but also oftentimes kind of that reaction bite, you know, that'll cause that fish to jump in and whack that hair jig. Some other things that I feel, again, with some of the hair jigs that I tie up, that again is a confidence thing, is I always throw some tinsel on my hair jig. And that's, I've always got that little bit of flash. And that might be something to it too, where the plastics don't have that same sort of flash. They don't quite have that same sort of movement and that to them when you're popping them off the sand. And so I think the blade bait almost has the same. You give that blade bait just a little bit of a snap. Now you've got that movement, the vibration, and you've got some shine in the water too, you know, so they see that glitz of a blade bait also. And again, it's the, when I go out and do some vertical jigging, for instance, last year, my pattern with the majority of the clients I had last year, we'd start our mornings out shallow pitching and looking for those big fish and that had moved up onto some of these shallow sand flats. And so we were hair jigs, blade baits. And then as our day wore on, then to move out and try to get some of those eater fish and that, we'd move out deeper off of these breaks. And that's when we'd vertical jig and we'd vertical jig with plastics. And that was putting our eater fish in the boat for us last spring.
Yeah. Do you have any like real preferences, like as far as your line selection, your rod, reel, like what do you think matters, if at all?
No, I think it does matter. You want an extremely sensitive rod because, again, in that situation, I don't want that jig to settle on the bottom for very long. As soon as I feel that jig or the blade bait tick the bottom, I want to give it a snap and get it back up off the bottom so that hair is constantly working. And so that jig is ticking bottom and then it's up again working. So I do like a sensitive rod. If I can drop a brand here, I'm very partial to the Trika rods. I've over the last few years, I've been fishing with the Trikas and I love the sensitivity, the feel, the lightweight and that to them. So, and again, to make longer casts, also in the current to make sure that I can pick that line up right away on a hook set. I like a longer rod for that. Minimum 7, 7.6 is preferred. And again, all of this is with spinning stuff, 2,500 size Daiwa Procyon or Fuegos, are my reel of choice. And then I'm using a high-vis braid. I'm very much a line watcher, not just watching my line to see the bite, but to see how my bait's sweeping in the current. And so I'm always running high-vis braid so I can watch the sweep of that jig or the blade, whatever I'm pitching, and then a fluorocarbon leader and that attached to the braid, and then the jig tied directly to the fluorocarbon.
Do you feel like that fluorocarbon and, you know, with the visibility that you have right now is a big factor in just that, you know, like that line spooks fish, or like, what's sort of your, like how long a leader, what size a leader do you like? And, you know, talking about that a little bit,
you know, leader wise, I typically, and not real scientific sounding here, but I run about an arm's length of fluorocarbon leader. And for me, it's not so much the length of the leader to keep the fish from being line shy. Mm-hmm. It's it's, you know, there's an old saying, don't throw it in the river if you don't want to lose it. And so you're going to lose baits. And so by having that longer leader, it's just a convenience thing. I'm tying less leaders because when I break off, I've still got leader left on there. And that, so that's what I do for my leaders, about an arm length and that, it does help obviously with the visibility, especially this time of year when the water's clear. Absolutely. It helps, keeping that line from spooking fish, especially if you're fishing the high vis line. The other thing with the fluorocarbon that I like also is it's abrasion resistance. And that I'm very appreciative of the high abrasion resistance that the fluorocarbon has. And the final thing, that's key to running that fluorocarbon leader is if you're really snapping and popping that hair jig, your braided line is softer. It doesn't quite have the stiffness that fluorocarbon has. And so as you pop and work that hair jig, you get a lot less hangups, because of the stiffness of the fluorocarbon leader. And that's the same thing with fishing a blade bait, having that little bit stiffer line so that as you're working a blade bait, and that also you're not tangling in your main line. And I will, on my hair jigs, if I'm in an area that doesn't have a whole lot of snags, I'll throw a stinger hook on there. And again, having that extra little treble on the end certainly increases hookup percentage. But if I was only running it straight to braid, I would also be tangling in my main line more. So that's the functionality for me for running a fluorocarbon leader.
Yeah, man, that's awesome stuff, man. I love that. That's all. I mean, it's that time of year right now where we're all, you know, I mean, I think a lot of people can relate. It's like playing a lot of tackle in our garage and in our basements right now, getting ready for the season. You know, so many of us that aren't like you that, you know, live and work on the river. Which, you know, remind me, I don't know if you said it earlier, when does your guide season typically kick off in the spring? When do you like to get things started?
Around the middle of March. You know, that's for me the time that I start booking trips typically is the middle of March. You know, I've got a busy week this week leading into the Minneapolis sports show, the Northwest sports show. I've got another show next week, but I've got some dates in between there, and that where I've got availability, but typically it's that middle of March. I know looking back at the calendar last year, my first trip of the year was March 12th last year. And you know, we're a little bit behind this year as far as our weather and our warm up, but man, that first trip happened on March 12th and it was game on for the rest of the spring. I mean, we kicked off our guide season with a bang last year. I had a gentleman and his son, I think his son was 12 years old, and they had spring break. And so they booked a trip with me on spring break, and the young man, we got him a 29-inch walleye on that trip out, and that. So Wesley got a personal best that it probably going to take him a little while to break.
Oh man,
yeah, that was a beautiful fish. And then they went home with their legal limit of four fish each, and so they got a nice fish fry out of the day too.
The thought of just seeing that line jump a little bit and leaning back into a 29-incher, you know, just on a long cast, like, oh gosh.
And that fish ate a hair jig too. Yeah. That ate one of my hand tied hair jigs. So the beauty, the thing that I feel so blessed with living as close as I do to the Mississippi River here is, you know, depending on how brave you are, you know, we've got a 9 to 10 month open water season here. And that I was on the river December 30th was the last day of 2024, and was back on the river again here, I want to say like February 25th.
Yeah. And a little bit of break probably ain't bad either.
No, absolutely not. Gives a guy a chance to tie up a few hair jigs and then get ready for the spring bite.
Oh yeah. Well, let's wrap it up right there, man. What is rattle off sort of your contact info, the name of your guide business again, just sort of highlight that and promote that here to wrap it up.
Sure, absolutely. So again, my name's Dan McGuire, and I run Big River Angling Adventures, and I do fully guided walleye trips on pools 2, 3, and 4 of the Mississippi. Best way to reach out to me is to either call or text, and I'm 715-308-5237. I do have a Facebook page, Big River Angling Adventures. You can go there and check that out. And that you'll find more information, see some of the fish pictures and happy folks that have fished with me over the last several years. That's the best way, is to call or text. The other way, just to again put a self-promotional plug in here, I will be this week at the Northwest Sports Show in Minneapolis at the Convention Center in booth 1306. You can stop by in person, meet me in person, and book a trip if you'd like. I'm March Madness. I've got 15% off all guide trips right now, that 2025 guide trips that are scheduled during the month of March.
Nice, man. And what are the dates of that Northwest Sports Show? What days this week?
Let's see here. It opens Thursday, March 13th, and Thursday, March 13th, and runs through Sunday, March 16th. I am going to be doing presentations every day at the Northwest Sports Show too. So all 4 days, I'm set up doing seminars there as well.
Nice. It's like, I wasn't thinking this at all until you were name dropping the Northwest Sports Show, but that's actually like the anniversary of this podcast. I want to say it's, I'd say 4 years. It might actually technically be 5, but yeah, the Northwest Sports Show is where I ripped the plastic off.
Really?
Of my podcast equipment for the first time.
Very nice.
And recorded some interviews at the Northwest Sports Show. Yeah. And that was like the the birthplace of this podcast. And then fast forward a few months, COVID hit, and then we couldn't, meet people in person anymore. And then everything changed there. But so we've been up over the phone pretty much ever since then.